Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I try to upload something to it once a week every 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks this time because I was working a fight for the UFC last weekend. The other way and most efficient way to get the podcast is to simply go to the iTunes search engine and enter Warman Kickfighting Show or enter Lord Gaul, and the podcast should pop right up. Lord Gaul was my username back when I fell in love with the sport, back when I was on the kickboxing forums, K1 USA, Kakatugi, and so on and so on. So I'll get right into it. This is my year-end show. Normally, I like to try to get host and guest on, other host, and definitely get some guests on for you, but you're just riding with me today. Riding with me today as I go ahead and go through this list. And the reason why you're riding with me today, it's because I'm introducing something that I've always wanted to do that I hadn't done before in the past. I hadn't had like a name for it, but I'm a big fan of like college football and how other sports have like what would be like your all-world team. So in college football, they're called an all-American team. So they have usually, one or two guys from the best positions, and they make up a team and say, if you look at this year in the season, these athletes represent the best of those positions all over. And if you were to go to, let's say, the NFL, they have, all NFL team, all pro team, all NBA team, same thing. They usually have three all NBA teams of 15 guys, three teams, and it represents the best. And I always thought kickboxing should have something like that. So I'm going to introduce it this year and then try to stay consistent with it until Jesus comes to get me. So I'll do my best to try to have it every year when I do this show, something different, something new that I wanted to play with. I had the idea before, but I didn't quite put it together. This year, I spent the time put together a 25-person team. And I really do hope that this is, kind of what you guys are all hoping for. Maybe I'll throw a 26 on there, kind of honorable mention sort of deal. I'll do that. I'll say a 26-person honorable mention. Don't know if I'm going to have them on the highlight, but my kickboxing highlight this year will have the first edition of the All-War team. I'm just going to call it the All-War team, Warman. All-War team. I'm excited to introduce it to you guys, and I really hope that you enjoy it. So let's go ahead and talk about the year in kickboxing. Overall, I say it was a solid year. We had our biggest event in quite some time with the Glory Collision as far as, media attention and internet attention. Clearly, the internet attention is a lot different. Back in the day, it used to be forum-based. How many people were on the forums? How many people were paying attention to it? Now it's Twitter-based. Now it's Facebook-based. And, for some people, it's harder to understand that. A lot of people feel kickboxing's down because the forums are down, and for the most part, forums are down in everything. Twitter is just such an easier medium to speak on a regular basis about fight topics. But back in the day, you could go specifically to the room that you wanted to and make big, long conversations about whatever the specific topic was. Now, it's usually you got to get started or you got to, tag someone in what you're thinking and you just kind of roll from there. But I'd say Twitter killed the forums more so than kickboxing isn't as big. So, once again, there are much more opportunities for prize fighters of all weight classes to make money today than there is yesterday. There's more money today than there is yesterday, and most organizations, with the exception of, the Glory to K1 comparison as far as what they paid, because clearly Glory's trying to have a business model that's better for their sustainability so that they can have success down the road, and K1, had the lights and had the production and so on. They just didn't. And they paid well, but they overspent their paying, and they ran out of business. So some guys, some of those old K1 guys are still upset to this day, and they still see their value, what K1 paid, and they don't look at the fact that K1's gone and don't see that them getting paid as one of the reasons for that happening. It's not, the biggest reason, but it comes into play. How much money went out when revenue was needed to sustain the business. Now K1's got a business model that they can sustain, and they're having great shows. Glory's having a business model that they can sustain, and they're having great shows. It's just that a lot of people are used to getting that big check and having that big promotion. So those people who hold on to that vision of what kickboxing is and should be, they have a different view than I have. I very much don't feel that way at all. My heart is, right now we've got plenty of kickboxing opportunities for people to work and get paid. We just don't have the clarity. So if I were to talk about some promotionals here, or some promotions for a moment, Kunlun, doing a great job. Super Bond, one of the best fighters in the world, if not the best fighter in the world at 155 pounds, or 154 pounds, 70 kgs. He's got a win over Sitichai. He just won a four-man tournament the other day. In that tournament, he's, you know, gets a stoppage in the finals, and he beats Cedric Menhoff in the prelims, if I remember correctly. So he's just a talented guy. And he was on autopilot for the Cedric fight. He came out slow, didn't really do much. It scored here and there, and then he turned it on later. So he's good stuff. Always good work there. Definitely want to see what happens to him down the road. I don't talk about him on the show as much, just because I don't talk about Kunlun as much. Not because I'm not trying to, but because sometimes their shows are hard to follow. They need a better map for me, for sure. Right now, they're doing a great job with the women's tournament with Wang Qihan, and she got injured, so they postponed the tournament. And I like the idea of the tournament. I like the idea that they're pushing, you know, young star, especially Wang Qihan, one of the true KO artists in the women fighting division. I'd say the premier KO fighter in the women's kickboxing division. But that didn't get known to me until I followed just a few people who are based out of China who give me that rundown. Their cards pop up. They usually do something on a regular basis, and sometimes they'll run one event into the next, and I won't be able to keep up with it. So they just need a little bit more yearly clarity, and I think that is something that we've had in kickboxing in the past that's easily accomplished. If I can recall correctly, K1 World Grand Prix used to announce their whole schedule usually around the third week in January, sometimes the end of the month, when you knew. And that's kind of what created the buzz. The buzz was created by the fact that you knew the date and you knew when it was coming. So they just went out there and they, you know, got a whole bunch of venues and said, this is what's going down. And then every once in a while, they leave their tournament format and they give us something fun, like K1 Revenge, where they did, like, just a whole show themed on, you know, rematches. And I like that. Just the idea of K1 Revenge, it creates narrative with the show. And that's one thing that we've talked about in this podcast before. Got to get ourselves back into storytelling along with the fights. And some of them are easy. You know what I'm saying? Israel Adesanya is an easy one to sell if you're Glory, because he does so much selling on his own. You can talk about how this guy is an internet phenomenon who's now on the brink of fighting and winning the title, you know, as he gets ready to go against Jason Wellness. This was something that a lot of people saw coming. You could talk about how he does both sports, MMA and kickboxing. Like, that's something that you got to get to. Just a small video about who he is, you know, his cockiness, his traveling. You don't have to send somebody out to him. You could probably pay a local team to do it, and they can put some clips together for you with the idea of the story that you have in your mind, and then send it out. Michael Duke, Daniel Young, I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. It's a great fight. But man, how much better would it have been if you had just had just 3 minutes, you know, not even that, 2 minutes, 1 minute apiece of you selling these guys just a little bit more. Dude, how he, you know, he's in some fights, but he just gets stopped after having really great moments in the fights. People tested, wonder about his heart, wonder about him pushing forward. You have that argument. You say that you sell that story. You talk about Daniel, how he has all this skill and all this push, but he hadn't been able to get the cards going his way. Talk a little bit about his background, coming from Africa and stuff like that, whatever. Just do a little minute segment on them both, then play the fight out. Then all of a sudden people are like, oh man, this Duke guy, in the past, Daniel had beaten him. In the past, he got the knockdown against Tyrone Spong, and then Tyrone Spong hit him back, and he didn't push, you know, he didn't have that grit. He didn't have that fight. It looked like he almost stopped on the fight. But here, today, he put on a war. He defeated that old person, and it just makes the story that much greater, because that's what I thought when I was watching the Duke fight. I was like, this is the guy. This guy who keeps getting up right now, keeps fighting back, keeps knocking Daniel down. This is a guy who was once challenged because of his heart in fights several times. That was the question. That was the doubt that people had. But he came with an angry expression, mean, ready to go, really, really bit down on his mouthpiece and put the war together. And it would have been, you know, pushed that much more if we had the history behind it. And that's what we're missing. We're missing that little piece of more history or more storytelling. So that's something that all the promotions should spend a moment in. Part of me, I might pick a card this year and just try to do one on my own. Just do a couple on my own just to kind of show you guys what I'm thinking when we say that. If you saw the old K1 videos, they weren't even in English and they made me like stories better. You know, I mean, just they don't have a lot of time, but they can sell you on it so well in Japan back in the day. So that's something that I would like to see adopted. They still do it with their K-1 show, so I like to look at those videos. But that's something that we need moving forward. So we need maps so that people could follow the season a little bit better. In NFL, in the Premier League, for the most part, you know, in all of sports, NBA, they give you the year schedule before the season starts. So that's what, you know, it's a little bit different. Boxing, kickboxing, combat sports, a little bit harder. But if they could give me, you know, 5 months out, that helps. You know, I don't necessarily need a, you know, full year. But 5 months, 6 months would be really solid for helping me push and helping me follow. Other than that, definitely want to see some form of World Grand Prix come back, K-1 World Grand Prix come back. I don't care who does it, but it just, it's still, I cracked the joke during the Glory Collision card. I said all over and over that I felt like it was the K-1 World Grand Prix kind of feel. Luckily for me, I got to get decent sleep in that day. Oh, wait a minute. I slept okay that day. I forgot I stayed up watching some fight event the night before. But when Glory Collision came out, I kept cracking the joke that this was the day that we kind of celebrate what would be the K-1 World Grand Prix. It had that kind of buzz, that kind of eyes were on the show. And it was a great card top to bottom. The Glory Collision had a lot of great fights in it, had a lot of great athletes in it. But the real reason why, you know, thought it was a great comparison was because that's usually the day that we have our Super Bowl. And I can go back to 2008, 2009 and listen to MMA podcasts, and all of them would pick who they thought would win. And if you didn't follow it all year, you followed it that day. So in kickboxing, it's kind of like our version of church. You know what I'm saying? It's like, for me as a Christian guy, I'll see people coming to my church on Easter and Christmas, because those are the 2 days that you always go if you don't go. Well, in that way, even if you didn't pay attention to kickboxing all year long, you would pay attention to it the second Friday, usually the second Friday or first Friday in December, and you would watch the big card. That was what we had here, and that was something that we didn't have before. So every year, they're doing these four-man tournaments, but I don't think the four-man tournaments are grabbing onto the way that they would like. I think 3 wins in one night has a little bit more pull to it. Now, again, they've got their model and they have what they're trying to do with TV and so on. But I'm fine with them going with the 4 if the eventual goal is to do an 8 at the end of the year. So maybe you just kind of have a setup. Now, and again, they want to have champions and championship bouts. They're trying to have that model. But the reason why I would like them to consider it is it's a great way to create more stars. Because right now it's like, they really slowed a lot of their momentum, you know, with what they are going to do when they signed Ishmael Lahm. When he comes out, and I believe he wins 3 fights, and then he loses just a few weeks ago to Ben Sadiq. And it's like, it almost kills all of the momentum. But let's say you had the 8-man tournament every year. Then you could have a person emerge and win the tournament that you weren't expecting. Or you could have somebody reign on top. And you build the aura of that person even more. But you had, you know, like a Roman Kralja has a great run and he meets him in the finals. So everyone's like, Kralja's the guy to pay attention to. The K-1 World Grand Prix is a star-creating machine. That is why I think people should do it. It gives you a full years of work that leads to one event. And even if you don't win that event, Ray Seffel was a kickboxing star. He never won that event. Jerome LeBanner is a kickboxing superstar and he never won the K-1 World Grand Prix. But the volume of work that led to that big tournament is the reason why so many people were made known throughout. You know, Artur Kashinko never won that tournament. Kickboxing star. It's should have won it. I did have him winning in that fight over Masato. But ideally, kickboxing stars, that's how they're created. That's very important for people to understand. That is what we had with the K-1 World Grand Prix. I'm hoping that some promotion considers going back to that. Now we've got a Premier League or, you know, like a World Cup League type infusion cards. They're definitely playing with some theme of that, but and trying to, you know, build it towards a fun final, 6 fights, and I think it's 4-fight final. But ideally, that night where everybody comes out and pays attention to your sport, you get performances, you get great fights. I mean, people still we see Gokhan Saki and Daniel Gita pop up on someone's Facebook. And that was a quarterfinal match on an 8-round tournament. Shahid Alohaj and Mike Zambides was a qualifying elimination round tournament fight. That's how these things are created. All of a sudden, you have 8 fighters that make your final, and then the next year, those 8 fighters are automatic in the elimination, and you give them new challenges, you know what I'm saying? So you have a round of 16, and in that round of 16, 8 fights, you get new people to go against your old champions, and some of your new champions keep going, or some of your new qualifiers keep going, and sometimes a new person emerges and beats one of your, sometimes your old qualifiers keep going, and sometimes a new person emerges and takes those spots, and that's how stars are created. That's what the K1 machine did. Right now, we've got these 4-man tournaments, and then if the person wins, if they can beat the champion, they're the champion all of a sudden, but they're not necessarily a star. So I'm hoping that we move to a role or to a position where the K1 World Grand Prix, and I might write up on this. I think I'm going to do a write-up for Liver Kick on this, but I got to get us back into that direction because that's very, very important. Going to go ahead and jump into it. Story of the year. Well, this is a no-brainer. Rico Verheerven, the best fighter in the heavyweight division, takes on Badahari, the biggest star in kickboxing. Like I said, the feel that we had on the night in Collision was just amazing. It was thick. It was just the whole... When Hari came out, and he had his music playing, and he doesn't use the walkway, you know, he doesn't use the rap. He always comes from the crowd. He had that huge audience following him. When he got in there, and they all pulled out their cell phones, and they are all jumping up and down, first thing I tweeted was, and the mental games begin. It was awesome. It was excellent. It was electric. The crowd was into it. The house was full. It was great. It was the perfect storm is what made it happen. And I've seen people on both sides. I saw Saki, Gokhan Saki was kind of getting into it, saying Rico Verheerven couldn't do that on his own. Badahari brought those people. And I'd say it was both. I definitely say more people in the crowd were in favor of Hari than were in favor of Rico. But when Hari fought Lant, nobody cared as much. You know, when Hari fought Semedov, nobody cared as much. Now, again, these weren't in locations where, you know, you could easily be seen, you know, like... Hari won like some, you know, $1 million tournament in Dubai against, you know, what was it? Peter Graham and Lecco or something like that. You know, just going off the top of my head, I know Peter Graham was one of the guys. But like, you look at that and you go, those fights all happened without anybody really caring. Now, again, they weren't in the Holland area where he grew up, you know, where he has that built-in fan base. But he has fought and people have not been as interested. For me, I thought it was a perfect storm of both, and that's what made it happen, and that's what made it special. It was an interesting night. It was a full card. It was a full house, and everybody in MMA was talking about it. Everybody in kickboxing was talking about it, and even some of my boxing friends were in on this cut in this fight. Now, again, the ending was so Glory-esque, it's not even funny, you know what I'm saying? Because Glory has some of those, they've got a history of those weird endings between, you know, Marcus and Levin last year and cut injuries and elbow, I mean, and limbs being broke. Like, just sometimes their last fight, just for whatever reason, something happens. Weird scorecard, something. But we shall see moving forward. But I'd still say the story of the year was that fight. Next, I'm going to go to KO of the year. Got some really good ones. DeMarco Dennis, a friend of mine. I got to work with him before. But, man, Dennis Inosante the Inosante KO with Dennis. Spinning back hook kick, very, very smooth stuff. Gregorian Jimmy, awesome fight as well. Gregorian landed really, really smoothly with the high kick. Good stuff there. On the high kick, very, very important because this kick got them on ESPN, which, of course, is the big sports media outlet here in the United States. When you get on there, it's big. And ESPN actually got it on there on Sunday night. And the show happened on a Friday, but I think it was ESPN 3 on that day. But then it was played on the broadcast on that Sunday night, and then later on Sunday night on a day where, if I recall correctly, I can't remember what was in the news that night, but I just remember one of the guys, Bucci Mane is his last name. He's one of the that's his actual last name. He's one of the commentators for ESPN. And then as soon as he said Morocco Gorin, I was like, you got to be kidding me. You know what I'm saying? And it showed him getting that big head kick victory. And, you know, the other guys, you know, I was like, ooh, you know, when they watched the head kick land. So definitely good stuff there. My personal favorite, just because of the way it kind of took off, was the Chingiz Alazov KO over Bruce Gaudron. It's just, the thing that made it so cool for me was Chingiz had been, he had not been holding, but he kept getting in trouble. It's like the ref was picking on him all fight, as he's, you know, easily handling Bruce Gaudron. And Bruce Gaudron had engaged and created some of the clinches a lot. And then the ref, it's like, I can't remember correctly, but I'm pretty sure he took a point when he talked to Chingiz for a really long time about it. Chingiz was trying to argue with him. They're speaking two different languages. So, but the ref had already made up his mind. He's going to punish him for this thing that he wasn't even doing. So then Chingiz just goes beast mode and blasts Bruce Gaudron out of there. He landed a head kick that got it started, a couple punches, a couple of knees, and then he just unleashed a combo and let go a mean left hand on the end of it and just blew Gaudron out of it. It was almost like he could have done it at any time, but he was trying to be a kickboxer, and then when the ref made him mad, he decided that Gaudron had to go. So just the nature of that made me like it. But if you want to go lights out, didn't see it coming, scary KO, you either have to go with the KO that happened as the spinning back fist to Jemima Betrain in the middle of the year, or you have to go to my favorite and my winner for KO of the year, Wu Shusong over Tayfun Oskin. It's just, and Oskin's winning the fight. He's winning the kickboxing. But, you know, Shusong kept getting close on that left hook and just kept letting it go. And there was an exchange where he threw it twice. He missed it the first time, and the second time he caught it so clean, and Oskin was out, you know, face first down. And it was just, and again, Oskin's a really good fighter, had a good year after it. But that KO was my KO of the year because just the lights out nature of it was just so crazy. It was something. So Wu Shusong, you and your, I believe that was in Kunlun that happened. That was my KO of the year. Big time KO of the year. If I were to go to, I don't even have this on my notes, but I was going to talk about the, you know, Bukal robbery. My robbery of the year would be, you know, Li Yong, the Shaolin monk, if you will, and his victory over Bukal. It was just such a spectacle. He was beaten easily three rounds, and he gets a decision. That was like one of the most trash things ever. I talked about it long when it happened, you know, but I know that you know, there is that appeal. I mean, in the, you know, the Shaolin monk dude has got a huge, you know, following, huge audience, you know, he did huge TV ratings, but he got beat up. And when he got beat up and they didn't say the right winner, I wonder how many people at home in China were like, congratulations, our champion beat an old K-1 legend. And I wonder how many people were like, all right, well, that was trash, because that's what it was. Breakout star of the year. There are four names that I'm going to throw on this list, and there's some, you know, some good stuff in all of them. But these four are people that I really want you to pay attention to, because it's just the internet buzz that kind of followed them after some of their successes. I'm going to start off with Roman Kriklia, or Kriklia. He is a young 93 kgs, two heavyweight, you know, contender. He won the K1. He, short notice, he gets into a K1 tournament for their 93 kg contender tournament. He's in right away. I love that he got in. He wins it easily. As soon as I saw his name was in, I was like, Roman's winning. And I had picked a different winner before it. And then as soon as I saw that he was a replacement for somebody, I was like, there's no reason to even, you know, count this one up. Roman's winning this. He won that one. He had a big-time year. He started off the year with a victory over Fabio Quasi. He was a guy that people the year before may have knew him, but this year I saw consistent talk about him, you know, as far as Twitter goes, as far as, you know, that kind of following. I definitely shout out to Roman Kriklia. Good stuff there. Israel Adesanya, I think he was emerging a little bit as a star the year before. So you could definitely make the argument that he was on his way. But this year, because he, you know, erased a lot of losses, the, you know, the Alex Pereira loss, of course, you know, his run to win that four-man tournament and Glory earning himself a shot for the title, and, you know, later this month of January, he still did MMA. The fact that he kept popping up on people's Instagram videos, you know, he kept just little KOs here and there, his wit, his jokes, the way he sells himself. I think Adesanya is an important part of kickboxing, someone to pay attention to moving forward. He is definitely a breakout star of 2016. Another guy that I'm going to throw on the list, Cedric Dombey. Cedric Dombey fought a million times thanks to opportunities in China. Gets a victory over Mirko Grunhardt. Earns a shot at the title. He talks and moves his way into a shot at the title, which is very, very important. I like how he had the, you know, the what I think I saw, a decapitation shirt with Nicky Holtzgen. But basically, I like that his kickboxing game backed up his talk, because he got people emotionally invested, and they went out there trying to kill him or waiting on big shots, and he went out there kickboxing and adding up on the scorecards. And he's a guy who I thought was going to emerge and be a star last year, and then he lost to Kongolo, and, you know, Johan Kongolo. And then he, you know, went back to work. I think he won, like, 8 fights or 9 fights and, you know, maybe lost one. He had a loss to Fien Biang, but, you know, that's debatable. But I think he won another 8. And he just kept building resume and building skill set and selling himself, which is so, so important. Which is why if you just put a video on this guy, you know, 90 seconds, you all follow him around in his neighborhood at his gym, you know, just put together a 90-second clip, he'll give you like 45 minutes of content that you can use, because he talks and he'll sell himself. So shout out to Cedric Dombey, really, really emerging, and I'm excited to see what he can do. The last of the breakout stars for this past year, Tenshin Nasukawa. And the reason why I like Tenshin so much is, first of all, we're talking about a prodigy. I'd say he's the best prospect to come out of Japan since Nori, you know, 18 years old. I think Nori, I say Nori over Hiroya. Hiroya was never so much a prospect in terms of he was a guy, a kid who was pushed to be a star. But I didn't see prospect in him. Even though he won one of those 3 tournaments that he did. Masaki Nori was 17, and when I think he won the first Koshin tournament, and he just started to just build slowly, and you could see the tools, and you're like, this kid's going to be something one day, despite the fact that they didn't even have the tournament. I would say since him, Tenshin Nasukawa is the next star in that making, and Tenshin's slick southpaw. Anytime you throw anything with your right side, he's looking to counter it. You know, he plays a drag game. Drag game meaning he always steps to his left and he wants to drag you into overextending on your right, your power hand stuff. So your right hand comes short, your power kick comes short. A really awesome fighter. Definitely check him out. He's got some KOs. If you want to hit him up on YouTube. Tenshin is just an awesome fighter, and he was a guy who I saw very few people talk about earlier in the year. You know, you just kind of had to be a junkie to know who he was, but by the end of the year, they're saying, we want this guy to go against Takeru, you know what I'm saying? And if that happens, they want you to go against the 57kg, 55kg king, it's because you made a name for yourself. So, shout out to him, it should be a lot of fun, and, you know, watching these breakout stars move into the year, because this is who's going to carry kickboxing down the road. Best fighters you don't know. I'm going to name some of these guys because you hear them before. Some of them are starting to emerge. Alim Nabayev is finally starting to get some notice, but he's still a great fighter that hasn't been on an elite card. He fought on a K1 card, but it was like an undercard fight when they had their K1 World Grand Prix, their MAC Grand Prix, the one that Bacow ended up fighting with Kiel and Enrico Kiel. And on that undercard, Alim Nabayev had a fight, but really it went relatively unnoticed. He hasn't been used in a big way. He hasn't been sold in a big way. I'm surprised Glory hasn't given him a shot. I'm surprised, you know, Legend came and went, but I'm surprised that, you know, K1 hasn't given him a call. K1 doesn't really have the bigger weight classes, so I'm not super surprised by that. But I think that he would be a good fit for anybody. Kunlun could use him a lot. He's finding ways to make money. He's fighting in France, win over Ledone, you know, earlier this, not too too long ago, maybe a few months ago. He's got all the tools. He's got a good switch stance style. He's W5 champion. I like his head movement. I like how he finds weird shots at weird angles. He's just an awesome fighter. But despite it all, he is not getting the opportunity. So we'll see what happens, you know, moving forward. But give this guy a call. Chingiz Alazov, as I mentioned before, the big victory, big KO victory over Cadron. He's got, you know, you just look at his resume and the guys who he's beaten, and you would just think at some period of time, Glory's going to give this guy a call. K1's going to give this guy a call. Glory in particular, because they have they've been focusing on the European market, and they're trying to do a couple of shows in the U.S. and then get out to Europe where they can make it look like a big deal. Because I've got no problem watching me some, you know, kickboxing on a Saturday afternoon, which is exactly what it would be for a lot of the fight cards that they do over in Europe. If they're going to do that, they got to give Alazov an opportunity. He's very, very good fighter. KO threat, fights from both stances, KOs from both stances. He just got to get his shot. You know, he just got to get his shot. Fang Bian is a guy who, moving up the ranks in middleweight, doing some good things, got some good victories. There's only one problem. The thing that's keeping him from being a star is people don't think that he's winning all the fights that he's winning. You know, he's got some questionable cards to go in his way. You know, there are some stars in China that you look at them and you're like, all right, this dude is a legit, it was going to happen. I've been saying it on this podcast for a while. The talent pool is too big. Eventually, they're going to find some guys who are out there getting some actual wins. And they've got some legit guys. Jian Liang, legit. Jian Liang is legit. Legit top talent, legit resume. Don't need to push that guy. You know, like, don't need to push that person. Just keep putting him out there, and he's going to make it happen on his own. Push him in terms of giving him, like, publicity and so on, but you don't need to back him with cards that didn't go his way. He's just a talent, and he made it happen on his own. Wang Qihan, she's just a talent that made it happen on her own. This seemed, when you see Fang Bian get some of those victories, it just makes you think, this person's being forced on us, and they're not as good. Medi is another fighter who's in that same category of, you don't know of them because they're getting victories, and they're getting victories over notable names in the sport. Medi getting some quality wins over some female fighters. It just, their cards are questionable, and some of them look like they shouldn't have won some of their battles, and that's going to go against them. But Fang Bian is really developing a good resume, fighting well in China. We'll see what happens to him down the road. But those are three stars that are very, very good fighters that you probably don't know. Must-see TV. These guys are athletes, you know, must-see, must, you know, internet, must-watch, I should say. I feel like these two competitors are people who, if you've seen them at any particular time, I'll say three. If you've seen these athletes at any particular time, you would think higher of the kickboxing product because they're in it. And not just that they're entertaining all the time, you know, but there's just something different. There's something different that makes you say, this is who you want to see at all times. Something about their style, something about the way they compete. So I'll go ahead and name four people that I'd say, okay, you watch these athletes, you're going to get the best of the kickboxing brand as much as possible. Artem Vakhadov. Artem Vakhadov will show you an entertaining brand of kickboxing, but he'll show it to you from so many different, you know, stances and angles and from so many different game plans and styles. He can just box. He can play just a single strike to low kick game. He can play a combination of low kick game. He can play a body kick game. He can play a clinch game if you want the full rules Muay Thai. He can just win straight boxing matches if you want straight boxing. He has every tool. He puts it together. He has these periods of time. His guard's pretty solid. He really does do a good job of moving around and making the sport his own. And he is a legit best fighter in the world, but not just that, in his weight class, but not just that. Not just that he's a super talent and he's getting his hands raised all the time. When you watch this guy kickbox, you really, truly are watching an exceptional representation of the highest level of this sport. So when you look at it, there was a while ago, Arsenal event a couple years ago, he was my Fighter of the Year. And in that year, the reason why I liked him as my Fighter of the Year was because he had done such a great job of not just, you know, winning, but people were saying, could this guy be the best striker on the planet? He has, you know, what would be a little bit of Vasily, you know, Lomachenko, with his head movement and his angles, the way he shoots punches from his hips, from his strong stance. He could win in the clinch when he was, you know, smaller, but when he got into the bigger weight classes, he had developed the savviness from place barring and from moving around. So his low kicks game, and it's almost like he was winning the fights on easy. You know what I'm saying? Everybody else is trying hard. He's winning easy. And sometimes I'll see people, they'll post things to kind of show, like, the might of Muay Thai. And you'll say, you know, there used to be that old clip from a boxing movie. It wasn't that long ago where he says, you can play baseball. You can't play boxing. And Muay Thai has kind of adopted that and say, you can play, you know, whatever, but you can't play Muay Thai. I would disagree there. I would disagree that there are people who come out and they have a mentality of, I'm going to score here, I'm going to score here, I'm going to head movement, I'm going to head movement, I'm going to angle, I'm going to angle. And they are not biting down on their mouthpiece looking to be as hard as they possibly can. They're playing slick. And that was his game. Artem Vakhadov is got those components in him where he can be slick, but he can also be the power. He can be a little bit of everything. And it just shows that he had the opportunity to, you know, he's a master sport in his country. He just had an opportunity to put it together. Artem Vakhadov is must see. Ilias Boulay, I don't care who he's fighting, what organization, Infusion, K1, Kunlun, watch this guy. Watch this guy. He's going to give you combinations. He's got a really good sneaky step knee. He's got good angles. He's got, you know, good volume. He's just a high representation of watching the best in the sport. When you watch this guy, you're like, okay, that's what kickboxing is. That's what kickboxing is about. And sometimes just watch some of his old fights and you just be thinking to yourself, how is it possible that this guy's throwing that many strikes? What's going on in his mind that he's got that much, that diversity of strikes? And you guys have heard me say it before, the new Dutch style. I credit Lucien Corbin. He had that long style of chain combinations. That kind of caught fire, and a lot of people are doing it. And you're starting to see fighters grow up only knowing how to fight in that way, where they blend together a huge series of combinations. He is a really good fighter. He's putting together really, really well. I'm excited about Boulay. I'm excited about, you know, what he does in kickboxing every year, all the time. Had some losses this year. Had some wins this year. But in the end, this guy, he brings it. He's a fun fighter, and you always want to see this person perform. In the women's game, Wang Qihan, I've mentioned her before. She's a legit KO fighter in the women's division. Now, you hear that, and you think that I'm lying. You think that it's about opposition. It is not. She dropped Jemima Betrayne before Jemima Betrayne came back and beat her. She really dropped her twice in the first round. But, like, that's big time, you know, and throughout she had three fights, she had two KOs this past year. One of them was big time shot upstairs, put her opponent away by work to the body and head in the corner. She's just got, like, lights out KO power. I would say since Erica Kamimuru, she is the legit KO puncher in the kickboxing right now. Now, there are other girls who have the talent, like Rena has the KO talent, but Rena gets it here and there, and she's been doing MMA, so she hasn't been kickboxing as much, whereas you're getting Wang Qihan. She's been in tournaments, she's been kickboxing, she's been getting pushed. She's a legit KO puncher, so she's for sure a must-see athlete, must-see fighter to watch. Definitely shout out to her. Always good stuff. Those three, I'd say off the top of my head, are for sure great representations of the sport. Now, there are other names that I would throw in there. You know, of course, you guys know I love Masaki Nori. I think that he brings an entertaining brand of kickboxing. He would be my fourth if I were to enter another person in there. Some of the Thai style guys are definitely becoming more aggressive, but sometimes their defense keeps the nature of the back and forth from being super entertaining all the time. Murat Gregorian also brings an entertaining style of kickboxing, but I'm just going to go ahead and leave it to those main three, Artem Vakhadov, Ilias Boulay, and Wang Qihan. I think that you watch them, they're must-see, because they show you elements of kickboxing, and they show you the sport at its highest level. Doesn't mean that they're always the best fighter in the world. Vakhachev happens to be the best fighter in the world. His weight class, Blades in the top five of his weight class. Wang Qihan definitely in the top 10 in the world for the women. But it's just, you watch those athletes and you know you're seeing the best that this sport has to offer. So definitely shout out to them. Fighter of the year. I have a split in my women. Two. First, Iman Barlow. Iman Barlow fought six times this year. I'll just name some of them. She defended her Infusion title twice, beating Petrikova of... Petrikova was from Slovakia. She's Slovakia's best. And Izuri Hendrixi, she beat her, and that was, I want to say, that was the November fight. She also beat Maria Lobo on the in Full Rules Muay Thai, and then she beat De Souza and Infusion at the start of the year. Iman Barlow, six fights. There was also a boxing fight in there, a couple boxing fights in there. It's just, not only is she good, she's just one of the best fighters on the planet. She's so consistent. She's been doing this her whole life. This is what she does. She's such an exceptional talent, and she's great. And the crazy thing is, she's like the number two female fighter in the world, but she gets so many opportunities to compete, and that's what's hard. Usually, the best women's fighter in the world doesn't get the fight all the time. That's what the history of this sport is. As soon as you become a Jermaine Durandami, people don't want to fight you. When you become a Lucia Riker, people don't want to fight you. You get to the stage where you're winning all the time, and people are done. They are done seeing you go out there. And, they want to see you. The audience would love to see you fight and kill somebody. But the coaches are, especially in the women's game, they're definitely, all right, we're not going to do that one. You know, I love you, but I don't want you to go out there and get, you know, beat up. I know we're pursuing this, but I don't want you to go out there and get beat up. So there, that comes into play a lot with women's fighting. So there's a reason why a Lucia Riker eventually ran out of opponents one day, and a Jermaine Durandami eventually ran out of opponents one day. Usually the best female fighter on the planet has that struggle at one period of time. Not so in this case. The two best female women fighters in the world right now, one and two, are my co-fighters of the year for 2016. The other is Anissa Mexen. Anissa Mexen won eight fights this year. Eight fights this year. So the only reason why Iman didn't have more is because she was forced to do a boxing fight when she went for a Muay Thai fight. So she had two fights fall through, or she would have had eight too. So Anissa Mexen, the French fighter, she's got victories over Fatima Pinto, Teresa Gunderson. Those are solid victories. Pinto's a strong girl, gets a lot of moves, training and fighting experience. She's been in Thailand. She's been all over. Teresa Gunderson, she's been to Thailand as well, representing Sweden very well, if I'm remembering correctly. Sweden, I believe, is her country of origin. Danateli Panu, Mariam Usla, of course, she's got that. She's very strong for the weight class. She punches very well, and she caught Anissa Mexen clean a couple times, and the Mexen just kept pushing. Fanny Palumpi, having a really good year. She picked up on the kickboxing style a little bit better, and still she fell short of beating Anissa Mexen. And then we have Dilara Yildiz was in October. And then at the top of the year, Camilla Paiva, who I'm not as familiar with, Paiva Rosario, that was the beginning of the year. So eight fights for Anissa Mexen. These women are elite. They're very, very skillful. They can find their offense in anybody. You know what they're going to do, and they're going to do it anyways. Mexen, of course, clean, sharp boxing, always good with the low kick game. She's got a sneaky high kick. The power kick that comes from, Iman Barlow, definitely mean her boxing is getting better. Eventually, they got to do it again. These girls should fight four or five times before they move on. Of course, Mexen is preparing herself to do MMA as well. They're super talented. Can't wait to see more of them. My male fight of the year is Ku Fairtex. Ku, I mean, he's at a bunch of different gyms, but he is the legit best fighter in the world, 65 kgs, and 65 kgs is hot right now. It's such a strong, strong weight class. He just put together great fights all year. He beat Blade twice in 2016. Masaki Nori, Hiroya, Masaru Glunder, Minoru Kimura, who had that one victory over him, and then, of course, he came back and really gave it to him in the second bout. Ku is just, he's an amazing fighter. He's an amazing fighter, and he's stopping guys. He stopped Belaid in that K1 final. I just love watching him fight. He is, for me, a legit best fight in the world. Now, there are some guys who've got more wins. You can make an argument for other people, of course. You can make an argument for Superbon, of course. But Blade, Nori, Hiroya Glunder, that's just an awesome array of guys. And again, the attrition of winning a one-night tournament matters to me. So Ku is my winner. Definitely my fighter of the year. I'm excited for people to see that part of the tournament. So that's it. You know, fight card of the year, Glory Collision, K-165 World Grand Prix. Those were the two notable standouts for me. I leaned towards the 65kg Grand Prix. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it brought a lot of excitement. Glory Collision had some ups and downs with it, and then the way it finished was the main reason why it couldn't be my fight card of the year. But the 65kg tournament, I believe, is all action, and you can watch that whole thing and just enjoy every moment of it. So we're going to go ahead and get to the All-War Men team. I'm excited about that. The All-War team is what I'm going to call it, so when you guys see my highlight, you'll know what it is. I'll just go ahead and rock it, okay? First of all, we're going to start off with Anissa Mexen. Anissa Mexen, I'll go ahead and go with the women first. Anissa Mexen, as I mentioned before, one of the best fighters in the world, won 8 times this past year. Iman Barlow, who I've called my daughter on this show many times. I've been following her since she was 15, 16 years old. She won 6 fights, defended her Infusion Time several times, went over to Lion Fight, won the title there. Just someone to watch, you know, really, really talented girl. One of the best representations of the sport. Gotta watch Iman Barlow fight anytime she's out there. Wang Qihan, as I mentioned before, KO Queen of China. She got an injury that kept her from winning more, but definitely the All-War team. Antonina Shevchenko, 2 fights in her comeback year. She would be one of my comeback fighters of the year. She had an injury that put her out of the World Championships in 2015. This year, she gets the opportunity to fight, and she was hoping to fight Urena Bears at some period of time. Instead, they have her fight a weight class lower at 135, and she's been dominating the weight class so far. She's been in some entertaining scraps. The first one was kind of, Capitia didn't really engage with her. But in the last fight, you know, of course, she got a better test from Dutch opposition, who kind of brought more offense to the table, and that showed more of Antonina's skills. So definitely shout out to Antonina Shevchenko. She makes the team. Urena Bears, just, you know, an awesome fighter who continues to get her hand raised. I was worried that they were going to struggle to find opposition for her. They keep finding at least 2 opponents a year. Urena Bears continues to be the best fighter in the higher weight class, and she just signed with Bellator Kickboxing, so hopefully that'll get her more opportunities too. Shout out to Urena Bears. Tiffany Von Soest wins the inaugural Glory bantamweight title. I believe that was contested 122 pounds is what they decided that weight class was. But the reason why I bring it up is because, man, we got some awesome total work, because Denise, she started her year in Thai fight, you know, winning at a smaller weight class earlier in the year. So she finished it going through the Glory tournament. That's 4 wins. She had an MMA fight in there, but like 4 wins in kickboxing and Muay Thai. Very good stuff from her. Denise Kilholtz went 3-1 in the year, but really she should have been 4-0. She wins the Bellator title, avenging her lone loss. She won the Bellator title for her weight class in December. So definitely good stuff there from the ladies. I go into the men. Takuru is still the man. Still the man. Star in Japan. I love the backflip off the top. I love the KO power. I love the swag, the aura. The people are drawn to this guy. It really brings it. So definitely Takuru, one of the elite young stars in the sport. My outside looking in kind of guy would be Koya Rube. He had a good year. 60kgs, I thought, didn't really move me as much as it has before in the past. He'd be more honorable mention, but definitely wanted to say, you know, note him, because he's still a very talented guy who had a very solid year. Kufertex, I mentioned to you guys before. Glunder, Blade, Nori, awesome year. Masaki Nori makes the War team. Stoppage win over Slamani. Eddie Nuit Slamani is a solid fighter who I actually thought had the length and the tools to give Sanchai some trouble. Super wrong there, but he at least went the distance with Sanchai. he got that work of Nori. Nori hurt him to the body, stopped him in the third. Misaki Nori also had a victory, KO victory, over Hiroya, if I remember correctly. He beat Hiroya, and then he had a KO victory over Kimura, and then a victory over Glunder, avenging the victory that Glunder really got himself famous off the fight with Misaki Nori. That knee, he came out on fire, he was winning the fight, he split his guard with the knee. So Misaki Nori was able to avenge that fight. And the Hiroya fight was a really, really good fight, like fight of the year fight. So Misaki Nori, definitely up there, awesome stuff. Georgia Petrosian, he's on the team. His wins were not as significant, but the Jordan Watson win just shows just how talented this guy is. In the way that I talked about Bukau, Bukau has just this sneaky, Bukau, as talented as he is, been going against guys that you don't know of, that aren't as good, that aren't as popular, but did Petrosian have a good outing against, especially that third round, a good outing against Jordan Watson. He's a very solid, a very talented guy. Jordan Watson, to me, probably won round two, he was battling back well, but once that leap hook got Petrosian started, he put it away, and that was awesome stuff. So shout out there. Kuei Yang Lang wins over Belaid. One of the better resumes. Just go ahead and look at this guy's resume. He's a legit Chinese prospect. Not even prospect. He's one of the best fighters in the world around the 65 kg mark. Kuei Yang Lang is only missing more opposition from Japan. He's not going to be able. He should get the opportunity to go to K1, but I don't think they're going to bring him up. I think Kunlun's going to try to bring some of those athletes down, and those athletes will go. And that's important. That's important that he goes against other opposition and that he travels, because he's talented enough to get big wins. So Kuei Yang Lang, definitely on the all-war team. Sanchai, I was almost not going to have him on the list because he's got so many tie fight type fights, but he does have three wins. He's got a glory win over Slomani, as I mentioned before. Sidichai wins back the glory championship over. He won it over Robin van Roosmalen. Defended it and fought for like the third time, in like a year. He beats Murat Gregorian, so shout out to him there. And the last fight had more separation than the other fights. So Sidichai moves on. Superbon, he beat Sidichai. He's beaten a lot of guys. He had a really good year. He just did it in Kunlun, where not a lot of people were paying attention. He's probably the best 70 kg fighter on the planet. I got to see Petrosian fight one of these two guys. We move on. Nicky Holtzkin, despite the fact that he lost to Cedric Dombey, still had a solid year, still beat Merthyr Gunhart. Cedric Dombey, I mentioned his credentials before, a really solid year as well. Talented guy, really has all the skill to, skill and the ability to sell himself to be a star moving forward. Artur Shinko only fought three times this year, but those three wins were legit. The Alex Pereira win, very, very good. Kunlun's given him the opportunity to still fight. He beat Alex Oliveira again. I like Artur Shinko. As long as he fights 3-4 times in a year, he makes sure that they're legit fights. He's a star to watch moving forward. Israel Adesanya, I mentioned you guys before, rising young star, very, very talented. Jason Wellness beats Simon Marcus, wins four-man tournament. He gets himself back in a position to be one of the better fighters on the planet by winning, or being recognized as one of the better fighters on the planet by winning the middleweight title. Shout out to Jason Wellness. Simon Marcus beat Artem Levin earlier in the year, but it's kind of a weird one. Two victories over Dustin Jacoby. He's kind of on the outside looking in at that list. But I wanted to mention his name because he's still a mainstay in the division. We finish it off with four names. Artem Vakhadov, I sold him like crazy before, defended his title. He beats Calvari, and then he, fights a, what was a unified fight that probably shouldn't have been a unified fight. When he beats Zach Mikasa, Artem Vakhadov, awesome. Roman Kriklia fought 10 times. 10 times in 2016. Victory was over Fabio Quasi and Jafar Wellness. Very, very good stuff. Rico Verheerven wins the most important fight of his career. They're probably going to do it again because it was an injury victory. Rico Verheerven had Badahari figured out by the time it happened, though. Badahari won round one, but Rico Verheeven was up in round two, and it was moving in his favor before that injury. He had, of course, defended his title several times throughout the year. Stoppage defending. He defended his title with stoppages, too. Good stuff by Rico, and Benjamin Adebuyi went 5-0 that year. So that's the all-war team. I want to thank everybody for following the podcast. I want to thank you guys for supporting the sport of kickboxing. I am going to do a full rules Muay Thai version of this. I always do every year. So for those people who are like, there were no Muay Thai guys in there, strictly Muay Thai guys, I got you. Don't worry. So shout out to everybody who's been following the show. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast for another year. I'll do kind of like a exciting, this is what's coming for the year podcast coming up. I just want to thank you guys once again for following. Be there. Be there in person if you get the opportunity to watch these events, and follow me on Twitter at Steven the Warman if you want to see or hear anything about the latest kickboxing news. I break down fights every weekend from pretty much every sport. Thank you guys again for, you know, your love and your support for my kickboxing podcast all this time. God bless, and everybody have a good one. Peace. Oh, also look out for the kickboxing highlight. I should have it done next week. Later.